You are listening to an Unlocked New Models episode.
Less than half of our interviews, discussions, audio dramas, or monologues are ever made public.
To access all of our content, or to join the discussions in our Discord server, visit patreon.com/newmodels or newmodels.substack.com.
You're now listening to New Models.
Welcome to New Models. This podcast was recorded with writer Dean Kissick in early February. At the time, we imagined it to be an emergency podcast. The emergency being the trailer that artist and friend of the pod John Raffman had made, using all AI text-to-image to video-generated content for Kanye West's DBA Ye and Ty Dolla $ign's collaborative album, Vultures. Raffman's chopped and screwed, stable diffusion come begotten come Chirac imagery suggested the second coming of an earlier influential online wave, that of Witch House. So we went to Dean with the hypothesis that we might be entering a cultural phase resonant with those early Witch House years of 2007-2008, when the fogged-out dark aesthetics of bands like Salem provided the perfect foil to the corporate cleanliness of Facebook's growing social media dominance. Witch House is indeed one of the things we talk about with Dean in this episode, but the conversation ultimately went somewhere else. A discussion of the struggle for iconicity in a time of infinitely available content. Back when we recorded this, there was a thick fog around the album, when it would finally be released, with which tracks and with whose samples officially as part. Surprisingly, the album did actually drop shortly after we recorded, albeit with a different cover. A sepia sketch by Caspar David Friedrich switched out for a dramatic photograph of Ye in all black and his wife Bianca Censori mostly nude. Since getting COVID for the third or fourth or who knows at this point in time over Christmas this year, Carly and I have also been feeling a kind of persistent mental fog. It's nothing serious and has gotten better since, and could very well be attributable to the chronic sleep deprivation of being a new parent. But we've both been having weird issues with word recall and getting stuck over syntax when trying to assemble our thoughts into grammatically viable lines. The more skizzed, conspiratorial part of my brain imagines that this is what the lab-leaked COVID virus was really designed to do, to compromise our ability to use and parse language even while machine learning models master it. The eventual result? Our total dependence upon, and thus loss of cognitive autonomy too, our new AI overlords. Through the effects of COVID, we would become empty shells, puppets, organized and directed by centralized computational intelligences, with our sense of free will maintained only by an illusion of conscious agency. In a way, it's fortunate that all of the fogs, yays, COVIDs, and the steam from our overclocked freelance schedule led us to delay the release of this pod until now. For one, actually listening to the album, I found its vibe less Witch House Second Coming and more mindless NPC, although I don't mean that in a disparaging way. It is spectacularly mindless, with thrilling production that seems to dance on a razor edge between present and future. Yay, the GOAT NPC, appearing faceless on the cover, wrapping an endless stream of idiosyncratic memes over idiosyncratic collages of samples. Ty Dolla $ign, of course, has always been a kind of algorithmic hit generator, aggregating excellent production for his vocal performances rendered in the style of hit vocals. Together, the result is an album empty of meaning but full of affect and mimetics, and it hints towards a particular possibility of art in the AI age. Massive, strange, attentional objects that are at once mid, mass, and singularly subjective, assembled out of countless embeddings and samples and interpolations and intuitions, AI plunderphonics meets meme magic piloted by heretical influencers. We knew nothing of the actual substance of the album when we recorded this episode, but oddly, the conversation rings of those themes anyways. Probably because Dean Kissick is always an excellent guest and one who can often read the future. As for the episode's Witch House focus, I think perhaps I had been picking up on something related but a bit bigger. The first apocalypse of my lifetime was supposed to happen in the year 2000, as the popularity of the World Wide Web exploded and the Y2K bug loomed. Then, as smartphones revolutionized the internet in the Witch House years, another apocalypse was imminent. 2012. It was written. And Nostradamus and the Mayans agreed. Now, here we are in 2024, the year of AI and yay, genocide and war, the third round of this 12-year cycle, and things feel more apocalyptic than ever before. The apocalypse is often mistakenly thought of as an event, but it is an era. Perhaps this year, all the signs finally reach a tipping point, and we realize that we've been living in the end times all along. I'm Lil Internet, joined by my co-host Carly Busta. Our guest is Dean Kissick. Let's get into it.
Welcome. It's so nice to see
hi,
you.
Hi.
Welcome back. Very nice to have you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
So the reason why we had to put a call into Dean is because Kanye and Ty Dolla Sign have a new project called, well, it looks like the yen sign and the dollar sign, but YS, right? And this long-awaited album, it's been pushed back. It was supposed to drop in November, then December, then January. They tapped artist John Raffman, friend of the pod, great post-net artist. They tapped John Raffman to do a video trailer for the album. And it's really our first taste of the aesthetic around the album that we've seen. And John Raffman has been working with machine learning generated text to video images in some of his recent work. And that's what the video trailer is. It has a very somber Caspar David Friedrich inspired, black metal inspired, Grim Reaper inspired aesthetic. And we thought, oh my God, Kanye is returning to Witch House, and Witch House, Postnet, Witch House, Occupy, maybe C-Punk, being the foundational cultural event of the New Models podcast, we thought, okay, well, maybe it's a moment to revisit the genesis of Witch House, but also maybe that gives us some perspective on the particular moment we find ourselves in, which is one where there's several hot wars that are raging. Some people in Discord say we are in World War III. World War III is a decentralized war. You know, it's a particular time in platforms and networks, and we thought, maybe let's untangle this. Also, this album features a number of like canceled individuals. Maybe we've moved past that moment. So we called up Dean to help us think through some of the aesthetic precursors, to read the signs. What's the witchcraft analogy of what this album represents?
And read the tea leaves.
The tea leaves, right. The tea leaves, the coffee grounds, whatever. Mm-hmm. Of course, no one needs to be platforming Kanye. Kanye is like, you know, a super node of attention. But he is also a really astute aggregator. He has a very sharp intuition. He's able to, for better or worse, ping a lot of things that feel...
He's the canary in the creative coal mine.
It
like
has been.
The most famous one.
Right. For the past, you know, 15, 20 years now. So we thought that Dean has the sharp semiotic skills to help us with this. But so Julian came to Dean with a thesis yesterday.
So first of all, Witch House, and I would put the years as like towards the end of 2007, I think this aesthetic started taking shape, 2008. The term Witch House was coined by Travis Picturepane, but it was kind of a joke. And then the music press was talking about this new gothy, slow, chopped and screwed inspired sound that was popping up on MySpace, really, with Salem being the most notable example. But Witch House is a name that ultimately stuck. Essentially, how the aesthetic of Witch House functioned online was an early type of fried aesthetic, where it was blurry VHS screenshots from horror films or Faces of Death or, what is it, Begotten, a lot of occult imagery, a lot of haunted 1 megapixel Nokia camera, suburban decay and despair vibe. And it kind of struck this really strong contrast against the arriving Web 2 sleekness, the kind of shiny and glassy Frutiger arrow, and then, you know, the ascendancy of Facebook's kind of suffocating plainness and a general like flood of normies and corporations to the online world. And so Witch House not unlike Milady today or something, generated its own posting style and resisted recuperation by the search engines by always using Unicode characters in all the artist names. So they would have triangles and crosses and lightning bolts and whatever.
To the point where letters. If somebody friend requested you and they had that aesthetic, they used that posting style, you sort of friended them just because they spoke that language.
Well, as MySpace was falling away and Facebook was kind of becoming ascendant, you also had a lot of people using Facebook in the wrong way. MySpace encouraged you to use it in the wrong way because they allowed HTML, but Facebook didn't, but they still didn't have restrictions on usernames. Like my middle name used to be Haters Keep Talking, You're Making Me Famous, like all one word. You could just put anything you want in your name. And so Witch House people on Facebook would just friend request everybody who was like related in some way to Pathways of underground music. And to this day, a lot of older millennials still have 5,000 Facebook friends, like the maximum, because of that era of Witch House where everyone was just adding each other by the hundreds.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the thesis is, well, it's a question, not a thesis,
right.
Is that why now are we seeing a kind of resurgence or a rhyme with that time of the internet?
Are there parallels?
Yes.
Are we going through some kind of parallel? I mean, I guess like Kanye released Yeezus 11 years ago. 2013 is, I think, when Yeezus came out. And Yeezus has like a darker feeling to it. So you could argue, and I think even Jack Donahue, one of the members of Salem, even has like a production credit on Yeezus. I mean, everybody has a production credit on Yeezus, right? From like a Saffeldine to like Hudson Mohawk.
Arca, Evian Christ.
Yeah, Evian Christ was a producer on Yeezus. I think is a producer on this new record as well. Unless he was joking, never know with him. I know him a bit from home. He retweeted, I think it was a video of the first song on the album, a version of Backstreet Boys. Backstreet's Back. I think Evian produced or helped produce it. The question of why this is coming back.
Why now? Why has it persisted for so long?
Well, I guess just in terms of like revivalism in general, it's supposed to happen in cycles, right? So maybe there's a general late noughties revivalism or like, 2000s revivalism happening, which we've already seen in what they call indie sleaze or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think generally that's just a normal retro cycle and is very superficial rather than...
Yeah. I mean, something else is that if we think about Ye, if we think about Travis Scott, the Kardashians, Demna, Gosha, Rick Owens, anybody who's kind of like sharing this milieu, I mean, maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but like in terms of something that seems darker or gothy or something, but also very mainstream and algorithmically successful. I mean, not the Kardashians aren't goth, but like they're part of that world. Travis Scott, you know, Kylie, whatever. They established themselves just before these networks went totally nonlinear, and they've somehow been in high circulation ever since. I mean, even if Kanye is canceled, he's still present, right? It's not like he went away. And now I think Kanye named Gosha the new creative director of Yeezy, which he's relaunching. And I think Gosha's relaunching his line as well. And so it's a retro cycle, but is it even, I mean, are we in this time now where it's like, do we call it a retro cycle or is it like a pulsation? It's like, did it ever really go away? Witch House became SoundCloud rap. It became Drainer culture. It then kind of became like some kind of ascended angelicism thing. Is this just like Kanye ascended or descended? If we think about revivalism or is it, do you think it actually is like some other property?
Well, I think we can think about this in terms of revivalism.
Okay, let's do it.
That's an interesting place to start. And we can see if that works. I have some other ideas too, but it is just an interesting question, like how we are due and we kind of seem to be in some senses having a revival of that period, the 2000s. That does seem to be happening. And like we have acts now like Snow Strippers that are they seem like a kind of Crystal Castles type act 20 years later. And we have Salem again, like Salem have launched a big comeback. I just saw Jack Donahue DJing at a magazine Christmas party last month. He was on stage like playing kind of Christmas themed trap and dance surrounded by strippers. And this was in like an old fire station for Richardson magazine.
I will say that that's very on brand because of course, like, I forget what track it is. It's like one of their King Knight album. It doesn't it have like a remix of Oh Holy Night? Isn't that the hook? It's like a very scary stretched or like chopped and screwed.
Oh, and Oh King Holy Knight, Night. Yeah, they do like, they interpolate the melody. They
yeah,
do their
exactly.
own version
right,
of
right,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing scarier than like chopped and screwed, like nursery rhymes or Christmas music, right?
Yeah, it's unsettling.
So yeah, it makes sense that some kind of aesthetics and cultural moments from that decade would come back. And it's really interesting to think about how they would come back, because that time in the 2000s was, it already had a sort of retro quality built in, like particularly, maybe not so much with Witch House, but like hipster culture in general was always based on revivalism and a love of the vintage and the retro. So the idea of kind of having some nostalgia for like a nostalgic moment is confusing and strange. I remember hearing Seth Price talk about this in relation to art, like the idea of how would you make an exhibition of the 2000s? It would be a hard thing to do because you have to work out what the hell was going on in that decade anyway. Hmm. So aside from this general idea that things happen in cycles, if we go back to 2007, 2008 specifically, I can do a little potted history of this period because this is a time I've been kind of thinking about and writing about.
Mm. Oh, right. I mean, side note, Dean, you're currently working on a book that takes stock of what also, you know, I know Ben Davis has been thinking about, Josh has been thinking about, we have been thinking about that there's a kind of caesura that happens in culture, or certainly in the art world, somewhere between the financial crisis 2007, 2008, and what that then led to in the art market, and then the present.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to write this book, but I just went into the very unfinished manuscript and I searched 2007. You know, it might be that the world changed in a huge way in 2007, 2008, and this Witch House aesthetic was just the first signs of this change, and that we're still in this changed world. So, of course, we still have Witch House and it never went away. And this was the beginning of magic and witchcraft and all of this. But before then, just on a basic history level, 2007 was when the iPhone 1 went on sale. 2007 was when Tumblr launched. Mm. Tumblr was maybe the main site for kind of witch house aesthetics. 2007 was also when Netflix and Pornhub began streaming. Mm. It was when Britney Spears shaved her head. That was in February, I think, 2007. March 21st, Kim's sex tape came out.
Wow.
And then October 14th, the first episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians started streaming. So at the time, we're kind of moving from like that old model of celebrity pop star Britney Spears to the new reality star, Kim Kardashian, who, of course, go on to play like a big role in Kanye's life. And then 2008, Facebook released its mobile app. That was when Facebook exploded in popularity. 2008 was when the National Gallery in London authenticated this Da Vinci's Salvator Mundi, you know, the kind of this lost painting of the savior of the world. And it was, of course, also the financial crisis. So I think my kind of simple read on it is that 2008 was when we kind of moved from the financial economy to the attention economy. Mm-hmm. Like when this economic system was pushed to the brink of collapse and we began to kind of orientate ourselves and our reality more around the attention economy. One of the things of this move into the attention economy was like suddenly we saw like what people are thinking, what people are like on the inside, which we haven't seen before. And we had a kind of unfurling of irrationality and magic and belief in all sorts of magical witchcraft-like systems and conspiracy. And all of this stuff really began pouring out then and is still pouring out very much now. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of completely changed the tenor of how it feels to be alive.
I mean, the financial crisis itself felt like some kind of black magical moment. Both the fact that the system could break and, of course, the fact that banks could be bailed out. Those two things just seemed like bigger than reality.
Also, I mean, just 2012, the alleged end of the Mayan calendar, the date that was supposed to signify the apocalypse, that became a really powerful meme as well.
More so than Y2K, oddly. Maybe because of the age we are or something.
And I think the internet just felt destabilizing right. at that point.
I mean, there was a lot that happened, though, between 2007-8 and 2012. Oh, so I wouldn't put those two dates together.
I guess it's more, though, just in terms of like what the feeling towards the future was. Like
right.
What the,
there was a feeling of end times already in 2007-2008.
We were heading towards something apocalyptic.
Right.
I mean, also, Wi-Fi started growing really rapidly around 2007. Also, the internet used to be, for a long time, a kind of affluent, largely white, educated, kind of tech-savvy demographic. Not everyone was like really on the internet like mm-hmm. that, you mm-hmm. know? And now it was like lots of people were coming online. You had a lot more Black Americans online, low-income international people
smartphones
online.
Smartphones gave everybody access.
Tech, you know, a lot of tech-naive yeah. users online, right. internet-naive users online, and they were uploading content, uploading mm-hmm. images, uploading all of these things, and also using the internet in different ways than its normal user base had. And so I think also internet archaeology became possible in the latter part of the aughts, where you actually did have a platform-enabled sort of trash heap that you could dig through mm-hmm. for images and for
I
the
would
strange
say it's more excavation than archaeology. I mean,
right,
to, Dean's,
sorry,
point, to
yeah.
Dean's point and, you know, Seth's point that the aughts are an incredibly difficult time to research, in part because like the archive was so ephemeral and because it was so difficult to know what was first degree and what was a quotation.
Right.
Text was starting to lose its basis as like a fixer of reality. But yeah, so Dean, you're finding this 2007-2008 moment as a moment of things becoming a bit unhinged. And you're saying maybe Witch House didn't go away because we're still in that moment. We're still in this time of magic. I mean, I would agree. I love, again, Flusser. Flusser talks about being in this time of pseudo magic. And the way he speaks about it is that these codes are programming us, but we're not programmed for these codes. And so we sort of believe it has a kind of magical property because we don't really understand how it works. We know it has power, but we don't really know how to manipulate it the way we did know how to manipulate text, the way we did know how to manipulate quotations pre-2007 or 8, the way Gen X knows how to use irony, but millennials have gotten away from it and Gen Z doesn't care. You can only really have irony if you have something fixed. You can only really have like a postmodern shift if you have something fix. So, si n'est pas un pipe is funny if you think a pipe is actually a pipe, right? It doesn't really make sense if you think the pipe is like this magical object that could mean all kinds of things. So, I like this idea that Witch House is like perpetually present since 2007, 2008, because we've been in a time of magic since then. I think that tracks. And then you're adding the fact that suddenly there was this abundance of other kinds of images that were just readily available, caches of images of people. I mean, I remember, I think it was John Kelsey who made the connection of how at the time in Williamsburg, a lot of the small houses that were built sometime between the 1930s, 40s, 50s were being demolished, and all of these large glass facaded residential buildings were being built. And it was like, you know, you can see directly into everybody's bedroom. And it felt like there was a parallel social media shift where suddenly you were in everyone's head. Everyone saw each other in their underwear metaphorically.
Yeah, I think you're in people's heads. I think of a painting I'm still a little too obsessed by.
This concludes the public release of this New Models episode. To become a member of New Models and frictionlessly glide with us across the surface of tomorrow, you can join us at patreon.com/newmodels or newmodels.substack.com.